of the self and have a spiritual migration towards Allah, towards the Messenger of Allah, and towards the authorities which have been placed and ordained by Allah, such as the infallible Imams. Of course, we had said that the spiritual migration is not the only migration, for there is also a physical migration. And both the physical and spiritual migration play an integral role in our ubudiyyah, our servitude of Allah. For the ubudiyyah and the servitude of Allah is in reality the road towards the migration and the mi'raj and the hijra towards Allah the Mighty, the Exalted. But dear friends, something that we have to keep in mind, which is very important and is considered a barrier and an obstacle in our ubudiyyah, our servitude of Allah, and in the different levels of the servitude of Allah, is that as long as one's soul has an inclination, a love, an attractiveness, a magnetism, a desire towards one's self and towards egotism and selfishness and self-centeredness and self-worship and self-idolization, this soul is not conducting a journey. This soul is not conducting a spiritual migration. This kind of a soul, which is focused totally on the I, is inclined towards the me and myself. This kind of soul will never understand the beauties and the profundities and the inner dimensions of ubudiyyah and the servitude of Allah. And so, dear friends, as long as there are residues of oneness in the salik's eyes, in the spiritual wayfarer's eyes, in the eyes of those who want to attain a perfect and complete ubudiyyah, servitude of Allah, as long as there is a residue of oneness, and as long as the walls of your own town and the adhan announcing selfishness have not yet disappeared, you are regarded as a staying one, a one who has no movement, a one who is still in their place and is not regarded as a traveler or one conducting migration. And so this is something which is very important and we must keep in mind, dear friends, is that if we want to level up our ubudiyyah, if we want to strengthen and give power to our servitude of Allah, and we really want to make it the best kind of ubudiyyah, we are going to have to release this I-ness, and we're going to have to move away from this oneness of the me. And of course, we're going to have to break down the walls of this town called myself, and we're going to have to stop announcing the adhan, the call to the prayer of selfishness and egotism. For if we live in this town called me, and we continue to proclaim the adhan, the call to the prayers of the I, we will never be able to move forward. Matter of fact, we will most probably start to move backwards, away from Allah. And as we move closer to the I, of course we will move farther away from our ultimate destination, which is Allah, the Mighty, the Exalted.
IRIB English Radio.
Our website is parstoday.com.
Ya Allah, ya Rahman,
Now we invite you to listen to Sheikh Salim Yusuf Ali.
We have a body and we have a soul. Oftentimes when we forget about the value of the soul and we forget about the fact that this is what's going to take us into success in the hereafter, what we're doing is we are squandering something which is very valuable. It's a very precious thing that we have. And let me give you an analogy. Imagine that you were given a big stack of $100 bills. Okay, like, let's say, you know, I don't know, big stack, this big, $100 bills. Now, there's a number of things you can do with that stack of $100 bills. Right? You can take it, you can admire it, right? You can give it as gifts to your fellow brothers and sisters on Eid. Right? But most people aren't going to do that, right? Now, let's say you have this big stack and you realize that it's gotten cold, all right? And you're looking for something to make a fire out of. And you look around, you don't see any firewood. Okay, you find a lighter and you have a big stack of $100 bills, right? You're like, okay, it's cold. I want to feel hot. Let me take the bills and let me light the bills on fire and make a fire out of them. Right? So now you're burning the $100 bills and you're making fire out of them. Now most of you, if you were to even think about it, you'd be in shock. You'd be like, how could you possibly ever think about using, forget about $100 bills, even if it was like a stack of $1 bills, right? You never burn $1 bills. Okay, what's the problem here? The problem is that, okay, first of all, how long is that fire gonna last, right? Maybe a couple minutes, maybe maximum 10 minutes, and then all those bills are gonna be burnt. You don't have any left. Second of all, and this is the bigger problem, the bigger problem is that the $100 bills are meant to be used for something a lot more important. Just take one of those, go down to your local Walmart, or we don't shop at Walmart, right? So let's go to Target, right? And pick up, some artificial logs, whatever they make these days, and bring that. And then use the rest of the change to buy some coffee, and then keep that rest of the money invested for your college, right? So the point is that that's just not at all a smart thing to use the bills for. Because they're a lot more valuable than to be used in such a silly way. Now that's just an analogy for us to think about, right? But at the end of the day, it's still a material amount of money. A big stack of bills, what is it? $1 million bucks, 10 million bucks? When it comes to the human being, that soul that we have is so precious. It's so precious that Allah connects it to Himself. He says, min ruhi. And Allah is infinite, right? So the value of the soul is infinite as well, too.
Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of Foresight. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.com. Until another episode and another great tip, fi amanillah, and God bless you all. سبحانه ما أعظمه والملك لا شريك له لبيك الحمد لله.
Is there any other way to get familiar with Islam besides mainstream media? Try IRIB English Radio. Thank you. log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
IRIB English Radio presents Viewpoints.
The presence of different scholars.
Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners. You're listening to IRIB English Radio. This is Viewpoints. I'm your host, Muzaffar Haider. Here in the studio with a smiling face, we have Sayyid Mahdi and Sheikh Ali. Assalamu alaikum to both of you.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah.
What I would like to ask to both of you is actually a question that's been on my mind, and I'm sure it's on a lot of people's minds. We spoke previously about the resistance front in terms of the media. Press TV and Al-Masira and Al-Alam, these are predominantly projecting the idea of the Islamic Revolution and revolutionary ideals. However, there were other channels as well, which at least apparently they didn't have anything to do with the revolution. There were other channels as well which didn't seem to be projecting as much the revolutionary ethos, and yet they were blocked. It does feel like a calculated attack against Shiaism collectively. So why is my question, actually? And I'd like to go to whoever. I think I'll go to Sayyid Mahdi first.
Yeah, Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. So here, just a little bit of a quick background. These are 33 channels in total which have been blocked. They have been censored, or in these very, you know, lame terms, they're calling it a seizure, so that it doesn't sound like censorship, but it is really, it is the censorship of free speech and the censorship of media. It is the censorship of ideas. There are 33 total channels that have been censored, that have been seized, they have been blocked, which include channels which are related to Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Sistani. It includes a Bahraini channel, which is an opposition channel based in for Bahrain. It includes, of course, Press TV. It includes Arabic language. Now, Press TV is news. Al-Alam is news. Al-Masira is also news, which is from Yemen. And then there's, like I said, there's a total of 33. So what's interesting is you find that a lot of these are news channels. Press TV, you can't really call it a Shia channel. Al-Alam is not a Shia channel. Al-Masira is not necessarily.
They're news channels, right?
They're news channels. Like, they're just like, it's like if tomorrow the, I don't know, the Chinese Communist Party wanted to block CNN and BBC and RT and Associated Press, I mean, the world would go wild. They would say, who has given you the right to block a news channel, you know? So this kind of censorship, first of all, we talked in a previous program.
If you allow me, there's a common denominator, right?
Yeah.
And that common denominator is that any channel who is one way or the other, loosely or strictly tied to, or in their calculation, in their research, their means, you know, FBI and the Homeland Security and so on and so forth, if in their calculation it's tied to the Islamic Republic of Iran, they get to pay the penalty, right? They are going to be blocked. That's a clear message that they send out by blocking some of those channels which are not so pro-revolution and so on and so forth. They wanted to give a clear message that if you even think of going down that route, you're going to be blocked.
I have a follow-up question. So, for example, now where is this coming from? One of the things that we talked in a previous program was this, that they are vulnerable, right? They're vulnerable. They feel fragile.
The West does.
This is why they did this very radical and extreme thing, you know? And they're vulnerable because they have realized that they're weak, right? You don't feel vulnerable if you feel that you're strong. Mm-hmm.
And they feel weak because their narrative is weak.
Their narrative is weak, and that's what's happening, is all of a sudden the Western world can no longer defend their ideals, you know, in this so-called offense. Really, it's the defense of this you know, non-mass mass media, this mainstream mass media, right? So whether it's Press TV or Al Masira or these guys, they are no longer able to defend themselves. They are no longer able to, the Western media is no longer able to promote the falsehood and really protect the falsehood that is coming out with, when it is faced with the truth and this alternate media that's coming out with these things. And they're afraid that the reality will come out. My final thing here is that this seizure and this censorship of these media outlets is in fact a colossal and manifest admittance of the failure of not just Western media, but their whole system and their whole propaganda empire. And it's interesting, ending with Imam Ali Khamenei, right, the leader of the Muslim Ummah, he says that the Western Zionist media empire can be defeated. And this is what you're seeing, the present day defeat of the Western media empire. Don't let the seizure of a few media channels make you believe that they are in control.
There is something very beautiful and benign about the revolution, and anybody who has the Islamic revolution inculcated into their own ethos, whether to a lesser or greater extent.
Right.
And one of the aspects of that is this idea of unity, which everybody on an Islamic level or a non-Islamic level, just humanity, can understand the importance, the beauty of the concept of unity. In our context, we often talk about this in terms of the Sunni Shia schools of thought within Islam. There's at least one channel on that list that I know of which not only did not adhere to the revolutionary standards, it also went against the idea of unity. And so if I was the enemy, just trying to put myself into the Western imperialists' shoes for a moment, it would make more sense to block all those associated to the revolution and leave the rest. Why have they blocked those as well?
Well, like I pointed out before, that sometimes, you know, you want to give a stronger message to your opposition, right? So what you do is you go that extra mile as well, right? So there are some other Shia, quote-unquote, media outlets that have not been blocked. And some of them are allegedly on the payroll of MI6, mm-hmm. right? And we know that. Some others, you know, they were, I feel, one of the dimensions that I can think of is that it's a clear message. You want to be wearing, you know, the libas and the dress of Prophet. You want to be representing Shia Islam. This is a message to everyone who wants to do this. Don't even dare to affiliate yourselves with Iran. So this is like a preemptive sort of a thing. You give a message. Because sometimes when somebody decides that I'm going to do this, I'm going to be part of the resistance bloc, it's already too late for you to give them a message. Right? By blocking these channels, you do a preemptive. You take a mm-hmm. preemptive strike. So those who are maybe thinking that, okay, let's change the direction because the tide is changing in support of the camp of resistance overall. So let's kind of, you know, squeeze in. Up until now, we have not. Maybe there were those plans, and because of those plans, they had to pay the price, or it was a preemptive.
And to add here, because if you read a few of these articles, it's interesting. The amount of, right, the Mossad has this statement where they say, through deception, we will conquer, or something like that. They have a certain motto that's like that, right? Meaning that one of their main tactics is smoke and mirrors, deception, falsehood, lies, you know, all this kind of crazy stuff. And so here you will find certain news outlets saying that this inclusion of non-revolutionary websites was somehow a mistake committed by the Justice Department, and they didn't do their research. I mean, come on, you have to be like totally naive to believe that a system that spends millions and millions of dollars on research and analysis, and they know who is doing what, right? There is a reason, and the reason which, you know, Sheikh Ali brought up for it, there is a reason why they have included these non-revolutionary websites, as
and
he
I'll,
said,
I'll
is sending a strong.
Mind,
they're doing it on purpose.
Another, yeah, there's another dimension to it. It could be that they wanted them to do certain things, let's say, and they denied, because those platforms are primarily running out of UK, if you notice,
mm-hmm.
the ones we're talking about, right? They denied, maybe. They're like, we don't want to get into this, right? So maybe they're getting punished. We don't know, right?
Mm-hmm.
Another thing could be that they may unblock them and unseize them. This seizure is going to be lifted,
mm-hmm.
As a result of some sort of a deal that they crack in future, maybe in a week or 10 days or 2 weeks. I don't know. Just saying that when you come to politics and when you come to the world, you know, politics and dynamics, these are complex decisions. They're not normally based on just one point agenda. You know, it's these decisions are multi-dimensional, multi-layered, generally speaking.
Right.
So there could be lots of reasons I can think of.
I want to add.
Is there no possibility that they did it out of a blunder?
No, there's no possibility.
I doubt
at all,
this is
man.
This is
I mean,
very childish and naive.
They're spending way too much money to be able to make these kind of silly mistakes.
And it's right in your face. It's not like something you have to go and dig. Right? It's right in your face. It's there. You're watching it. You watch the transmission for a week. So all you need is like a 9-to-5 guy, you know, on your payroll. Just sit there, you know, watch. And when you see these words, you know, just put it on a piece of paper. Very rogue, very
well,
simple.
They have computers that can just do that now.
Yeah, I wanted to add something just before the program ends. And that is my own personal humble opinion is that we should be very, very careful. And this is a warning to the whole world, right? The first part is that the leader of the Muslim Ummah, Imam Sayyid Ali Khamenei, has openly declared that the United States of America is spiraling downwards towards a crash. It has already begun. He said a similar thing about the Zionist regime, that the downfall of the Zionist regime has begun and it will continue to spiral downwards until it crashes. He has said the same thing about America. This is what we're seeing. If you put all the connections together, whether it's Trump, still so many months later, still saying that the elections are rigged. And, for example, the recent attack on the Hashd al-Shaabi on the border of Iraq and Syria, which the American Congress has said is a very inflammatory and something that Biden should have not done, right? And then the seizure of websites. Which is the seizure of freedom of speech, the seizure of opinion, the seizure of ideas. The United States of America is starting to act like a maniac, and it is becoming a very serious threat to the stability of the entire world.
I mean, it already was, but now it's...
No, but now it's just blatant, right?
Mm.
I have never heard that the United States ever seized somebody else's news media outlets. You know, I mean, this is just crazy. And now you're attacking countries left and right. You're closing down websites and you're sanctioning people for multiple decades. It's really just like the Zionist regime is a very serious threat to the West Asian region. The United States of America is becoming a very serious threat to the entire world.
And actually, that's a good point. Let the record show that this happened during Biden's administration, because if this kind of thing had happened during Trump's time, everybody would be
everybody
like, well,
was mentally
you know,
prepared, right?
Yeah, that, Trump okay, is going. It's Trump, right? But no, this is Biden doing this. So, But again, is this not a mistake on their part in the sense that this is going to create more
totally it's going
curiosity?
To backfire. Right. Oh, you have no clue. You know, we're already looking at these even secular chat media outlets. You know, I'm not going to name them, but, you know, I've been following them. People who have nothing to do with Islam or Shia Islam or Iran, you know, they're like, they're taking a notice of it in that free world. There is such a big opposition of what the United States has done. It has actually, if you notice, this action of the United States of America has endorsed what we have been saying for years, that they silence the word of logic, they silence the word of truth. Anything they don't like, they silence, right? Anything that does not chime with their own agenda, they silence. We've been saying it. Sometimes it was a bit tricky to prove it. Now it's right in your face. Now you don't need to prove it, right? It has backfired big time, and you'll see. Every time they have tried to suppress the innocent people and oppressed people of the world, it actually sooner or later backfired for them, right? Yeah. I've got so many of those examples, which you don't have time for. Same thing is going to happen in cyber world and in electronic media world now. They're suppressing, they're silencing it. You know, somebody who was doing it half-heartedly, now they're going to do it with more passion because it's already proven to them that they were doing it right.
That's all we have time for, unfortunately. A fascinating discussion, inshallah, which we will be continuing, inshallah, next time. From myself and from our honorable guests, we bid you assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Thank you so much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of Viewpoints. You can log on to our website at parsetoday.com, and you can email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Until next time, goodbye. A symphony of nature. Oh, it's taking my breath away. I'm so blessed out here today, yeah, Allah.
Aperture.
If you agree with me that travel is most rewarding when it surprises, then Iran might just be the most rewarding destination on Earth. By having lush, dense forests in the north, warm, sunny beaches in the south by the Persian Gulf, snowy mountains in the west, and amazingly hot deserts in the east, Iran is one of the few countries that gives the joy of experiencing four different seasons at the same time to travelers. I'm Zarin Shajeri, and this is Aperture. With an area of 1.6 million square kilometers, Iran is the 18th largest country in the world and the second largest in the Middle East. Its area roughly equals the area of France, Spain, and Germany together. Iran's diverse and striking landscapes offer a wealth of breathtaking and spectacular views to discover. This week on Aperture's Iran Trotter series, Jawad Gharayi will go to Bahu Kalat in the south of Iran, where the turquoise waters meet the hot sand of the desert. Here's the first part.
The living world is filled with unparalleled beauties. Beauties represented by Mother Nature across this beautiful planet. A planet that's been the only habitat for humans since they came into being millions of years ago. The beauties of nature have forever captivated humans everywhere. Many of what humans have created over millennia were inspired by their natural environment. To many humans, the word nature conjures up images of mountains and forests, but nature has thousands of other beautiful facets, and some of those facets manifest themselves in sharp contrast to each other. One of the most beautiful faces of Mother Nature is the barren areas of land, or deserts. Many nature explorers believe that deserts and steppes are the most beautiful parts of nature, and the most beautiful parts of these parts are the sand dunes and hills. But is there anywhere in the world with expanses of shifting dry sand dunes right next to a great body of salt water named the sea? Hi, I'm Javad Gharai. I'm an Iran trotter, and I'm taking you on a journey to the most pristine areas of this beautiful land. Chile is a beautiful country with unique natural exquisiteness. A country that remarkably has vast steppes and shifting sand dunes along the coast of the Pacific Ocean, offering a natural scene of unparalleled beauty. Of course, I haven't traveled to Chile's beautiful Pacific coast. My destination is the Bahu Kalat rural district in the south of Iran's Sistan and Baluchistan province. But I'm not going straight to Bahu Kalat. I begin my trip near the border between Hormozgan and Sistan and Baluchistan provinces. There are few places in the world where sand dunes meet the sea, creating a spectacular landscape. Such coastal deserts can only be seen in parts of Chile, in the Great African Sahara, and in the Southwest African country of Namibia. Some may find it hard to believe, but in addition to those few places in the world, there is an area in southern Iran where expansive sand fields meet the Sea of Oman. A place near the village of Darak in Zaravan County. The border between Sistan and Baluchistan and Hormozgan provinces, in the southernmost area of Baluchistan on the coast of the Sea of Oman. In the past, this area of Iran was called Mukran, a name researchers say was derived from the word muk, meaning the palm tree. Given its large number of palm groves, Baluchistan can be referred to as the land of palm groves in Iran, an area with a beautiful history and peerless natural splendor. Unfortunately, the general public in Iran doesn't know much about Baluchistan. The sea, the sand dunes, and the Martian mountains, all in one place, provide an environment with no parallel in Iran and, I dare say, in the world. But the sand dunes, the Martian mountains, and the Sea of Oman aren't the only things that make this area of Baluchistan unique. It's the multitudes of palm and other trees scattered along this area, as well as the many herds of camels, goats, and sheep grazing among these dunes and mountains that make for breathtaking beauty. Here, Mother Nature has made all her efforts to create some of the most beautiful coastal sceneries in the world, and she's done a great job. This is the result of millions of years of work for Mother Nature. So it's incumbent upon us and the authorities to keep these unmatched beauties just as they are, by not allowing any structures, however small, to be built here or in the surrounding area. Not even a few gazebos for tourists and explorers to use. We have to preserve this natural magnificence as it is. A geopark is a unified area that advances the protection and use of geological heritage in a sustainable way and promotes the economic well-being of the people who live in it. Geoparks are protected areas. Many countries dream of having one in its smallest and simplest shape and form. There are only a few geoparks around the world that are both geomorphologically rich and boast unique wildlife, history, culture, and indigenous populations. Countries with such wealth are few and far between. But this area of Baluchistan is home to several morphological splendors. It's also inhabited by Baluch tribes of a rich culture. Their traditional lifestyle and time-honored customs, a pure, unspoiled natural environment, the preserved remains from the remote past, the golden sandy coastlines, and the deep turquoise blue waters of the Sea of Oman. The traditional fishing apparatus on boats moored at a beautiful port, and finally, very good vegetation and animal life. As I walk on beautiful sand hills, I think to myself, how are we responsible to the generations that will come into being in this country, to the natural beauties in our country? I'm spending today relishing the stunning, untapped natural beauties in Zaravan and snap several beautiful pictures. The nagging question is, do we have the right to deny the children of tomorrow the opportunity to feast their eyes on such spectacular scenery? I wish no structure, no roads, nothing would be built among these ancient mountains, sand dunes, and palm groves. No hotels, no themed amusement parks to be built for human recreation on its untouched coastline. Even a few simple gazebos in the area can accelerate the destruction of this region's ecology and natural landscape. I wish all of us humans had more appreciation for the natural world, this manifestation of God Almighty's beauty, and paid it due respect. I wish all nature-loving tourists would choose to walk into the heart of nature, and by doing so prevented any harm to it. A lot of people in the world think that if they really want to enjoy their expedition into nature, they have to spend the night in multi-star hotels near their destinations. But that's not the right mentality. It's not in anyone's interests. Hotels that are built close to natural habitats do nothing but damage an intricate ecology that's taken millennia to be formed. There's an alternative way for explorers to both enjoy their trips into the heart of nature and for the natural world to be spared damage by humans. In other words, for humans to forge a partnership with the natural world. Local homes, campfires, and black tents, and also camping tents are the best options. All the people and officials in this area of Balochistan say they hope that in the near future, the area they live in will be registered as an important and valuable geopark by the relevant authorities living in the capital city. And by doing so, they hope the unique natural environment here and the culture and customs of the old Baloch tribes inhabiting this region will be preserved and protected. I take great pleasure walking about in this beautiful natural landscape and accompanying camel herders, but this is the end of this leg of my journey. I have to set off for my main destination, the Bahu Kalat district in the north of Balochistan. The main purpose of this trip is to visit an idyllic little village by the name of Shir Gawaz, a lush, vast, green patch of land 30 kilometers to the border with Pakistan. The name Shir Gawaz was derived from the names of two wild animals, namely the lion and the boar. The locals here tell me this area is home to wild boars, but no one has ever sighted any trace of lions here or anywhere in Iran, unless in the very distant past. Perhaps what ancient Shir Gawaz inhabitants meant by the word lion was in fact the wolf or hyena. That's because those two species have lived in this region for hundreds of years. But what has brought me to this area of Balochistan wasn't the lion or the boar. I've come here to see the Asian crocodile. Parlance, this rare species of crocodile is called the Gondo. They live somewhere between River Sarbaz, Bahu Kalat, and Shir Gawaz. The river is the biggest natural stream of water in Balochistan. It is known by different names by the locals living in villages located along its 300-kilometer course. Monikers such as Sarbaz, Bahu Kalat, and Shir Gawaz. My team and I have to walk a long distance to see one of those short-nosed crocodiles. But these gorgeous, thick-skinned aquatic reptiles in Iran are said to be very shy animals, making it difficult for us to find one. What that means is you can't get too close to these amphibians and admire their beauty at close range. We have been going about gunning for a crocodile for a couple of hours now, but we haven't been able to see even one just yet. As I say, they are very shy animals. The locals tell me I'd be lucky to see one, though they also say if you wait long enough, you'll definitely be able to see at least one. Guy is around 3 meters long. The people in this area call them the Gondo. Who would have thought that you could see Gondos, the short-nosed Asian crocodiles, in a river in Iran's Sistan and Balochistan province? At their biggest, these majestic reptiles are 3.5 meters long. The primary habitats of the short-nosed Asian crocodile are in Iran, India, Pakistan, Bangladesh, Sri Lanka, and Myanmar. The people of Shirgwaz tell me the best place to see the Gondos is the Shirgwaz Dam, a barrier built across the Shirgwaz River to impound its water. The number of crocodiles living in Iran has been estimated at between 300 and 400. The good news is the people of Sistan and Balochistan do not do anything to endanger the survival of these adorable reptiles. The bond between them is unshakable. In general, the Baluch are kind, nature-loving human beings, traits that are rooted in these noble people's culture and creed. The love of nature and of animals is part of the life and culture of the Baluch people. Animals are part of the family, among them wild animals. Probably if this were another city or country, many people would try and, man, this guy is strong. I bet if I let him go, he's definitely gonna break my bones or break my camera into pieces. As I was saying, if this mountain goat were anywhere other than here, without a doubt some heartless poacher would have gunned it down by now. But the people here love animals dearly. The Gondos that we saw earlier, they're conserving them so well. Also this wild goat, that's very close to the hearts of the people here. You can see many peacocks, partridges, and pheasants in the households here in Shirgwaz, and also in other villages elsewhere in Balochistan. The Shirgwaz River flows past Bahu Kalat village, providing the hard-working community here with water for their farms, fruit groves, and animals. Perhaps there are many people in Iran who are unaware that the fruits grown in Balochistan can only be farmed in tropical climates. But that's exactly what's happening in this province. All of the Iranian banana produce comes from this region. Bahu Kalat is also among the important producers of watermelons in Iran. The cold season is when the watermelons grown here are harvested and distributed across the country. I've just stepped into a fruit grove in Bahu Kalat. In my opinion, this is a veritable piece of heaven. Here, you can see several different species of fruits right next to each other. Something you may not be able to see anywhere else in Iran. Fruits such as bananas, dates, mangoes, papaya, all kinds of citrus fruits. I've also been told that even coffee is farmed in some of the gardens here. It's just wonderful. I mean, you could go so far as calling this place Little India, located in southwestern Iran.
Questions and answers in Islamic upbringing.
I have a son. He's really fond of football, and he's so weak in repeated lesson courses. I really don't know what should I do.
Could you tell me when we have to start upbringing our kids, that is, from the very beginning of the birth?
I have a little son, and he's so disrespectful. I want to know how to treat him according to the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon them.
Answering parents' questions in upbringing their children in an Islamic way.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran for big and small.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, you are now listening to the program Islamic Upbringing, and I am your host, Musa al-Bahadili. In this program, we strive to provide answers, suggestions, or relevant information regarding the Islamic upbringing of children. As usual, all of the information provided in this program are all based upon the Holy Quran and the narrations of the Prophet and of the household of the Prophet, peace be upon them all. Joining us in the studio is our guest speaker and dear friend, Sayyid Abdullah al-Musawi, who is an Islamic researcher at the Seminary of Qum. Dear Sayyid, I welcome you and Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, and thank you for having me.
Thank you for joining us, dear Sayyid. Our topic today is a continuation of the previous session's topics about the etiquette of rewarding our children. We said that there were various forms of reward, materialistic ones, social ones, and also rewards based on activities to garner experiences or worthwhile memories for the children. Dear Sayyid, please enlighten us further.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad wa ajjil farajah. So far we were speaking about the positive rewards and the types of them. There's only one small thing that we haven't spoken about. We said there's a positive reward and there's a negative reward.
Right.
Now, we'll just quickly mention that and we move on. With a negative reward, I mean, there are many that sometimes we do without realizing. Amongst which is to reward them with removing a punishment.
Ah, okay.
Right? So he's being punished, for example, not to watch TV or play games. And like, okay, now you say to them, look, I'm gonna let you play, I'm gonna let you have fun.
Right.
Well, that's not a reward.
No.
You know, you cannot remove a punishment with the reward itself by getting them to do the same thing that they were doing in the first place. That's right. Not a reward.
No.
Right. Rewarding them with something, or just by removing a previous lock that you put on them, okay, now you're free to go. You're not
a prison of this house anymore.
Yeah, you're not a prison of the house. You're not grounded. You're not this. Right. You're not that. I'm like, it doesn't make a difference. So we call it a negative reward.
Mm.
Right. So we need to stay with the business. We need to stay with the positive rewards as much as we can.
A reward needs to be something fun, right?
Rewarding. Yeah, of course. Something that they don't have.
Right.
Something they lack. I don't kind of give them something they already. It's like you're drinking water. I'm like, I'm going to reward you with a cup of water.
Right.
I mean, what kind of reward is that?
Thank you very much.
Right. Right? But if I tell you if I'm going to buy you a cup of juice, for example, that's different.
Right.
That's something, you know, different that you don't have. You know, so that's how it works.
Signifies that this is something special that has happened.
Exactly. Exactly. Because when I say reward, it means there's something that is going to be increased.
Right.
Something that you're going to have which you don't have already.
Right.
So that has to keep in mind when we look at the positive reward.
Right. We will take a quick break, dear listeners, and we will be back shortly.
I am a Muslim, Islam my deen, Allah my Lord, His word Quran, Muhammad Prophet, peace be upon him. I am a Muslim for all of time.
Welcome back to your listeners. You're listening to the program Islamic Upbringing. Today we are speaking about the whole concept or philosophy of the system of reward. Do you say it? Please enlighten us even further.
When it comes to reward, there are a few things that we need to keep in mind as well. A system of scale, trying to weigh things when it comes to rewarding. One is that when we want to reward a child, we have to reward them with something that they like, something that they have interest in. So the child could put his utmost work in trying to achieve it. For example, if my child wants a bike, but I end up buying him, I don't know, football, soccer ball. He doesn't like soccer ball. He doesn't want a soccer ball. Or I end up buying him stories. He doesn't want a story.
A book. He wants a bike. You mean? A storybook, you mean?
Yeah, a storybook. Just a story. Right? He doesn't want this. So if you say to him, okay, you know, you do this, and I'm going to get you a story. Like,
I will get you black socks for your birthday.
Yeah, or I'm going to get you a shoe. Like, no. You know, that's actually not going to motivate him. But if you know your child, for example, wants a PlayStation game, with my son, for example, he's constantly bugging me to buy him games. I'm like, okay, sure, I'll buy this game for you if you do this, 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 this. I make that as a reward.
Right.
So he works extra hard just to earn it because he wants that game so badly.
Right.
So if you want to reward a child, reward him with something he wants.
Just like we said, the reward needs to be something fun for the child, not necessarily for the parent.
Exactly. So we want something that we want the children that they themselves want, that they think is good and fun. I mean, imagine if Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says, I'm going to reward you in heaven by making a servant of a mu'min.
Right.
I'm like, okay. Look, being in heaven itself is a pleasure, but I mean, come on. So I'm going to do all this work so I can be someone else's servant?
Right.
I want to be a master of myself. So Allah says, no. You're going to be the king of kings. So He gives you that kind of something that you want yourself. Allah has
something you
desire. All the Quran, all the ayat of heaven, it's just to please you and you only.
Right.
It's got nothing to do with other people.
And there's something there for everyone. Like some people say, I do not want the various hoolies. Okay, you can get various castles or gardens.
Yeah. So there's always, the reward of Allah is always just for you to please you. The things that you want. That's why me and you, we work extra hard to please Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala in order for Him to give us all these goodies.
Exactly, yeah.
Right, because we want these goodies.
Exactly.
But Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala would want to give us something that we don't want. I'm like, why should I even work for it?
Right.
You know? So with kids, it's exactly the same thing. That's a very important value that the kids need to keep in mind, the parents need to keep in mind when it comes to their kids. And for example, star system.